It was a fine weekend for a trip out of Berkshire, off to face a fellow team of blue and white who were certainly making clear that they were no pushovers. And yet, Reading stormed to a fantastic victory with a late goal, earning a 3-2 win away at Brighton in the Women's FA Cup. Welcome to the Tireless Then Podcast, episode 288. Do not adjust your sets. I'm still Mark Mayer, your host for this week's episode of the show by Reading fans, for Reading fans, where we have somewhat shifted focus, at least for the start of the show, to talk about the good news that was Reading Women's progression into the FA Cup fifth round. And to do that with me tonight is Peter Matthews, a man who has been doing the reports on the Tarleton website for the women's team, an avid watcher of the women's team, and someone who's really going to be able to let us know why exactly this team is doing so well.
Good evening, Mark. Thank you for having me.
No, that's absolutely fine. Thanks for coming on. We'll, as I say, talk about that Brighton 2, Reading 3 result in just a second. Before we go into it, we'll just thank, as ever, our sponsors, Ezio Their Film, and our Patreon subscribers. So let's get into it then. Let's talk about Reading Women's 3-2 win at Brighton.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So as I was just saying, 3-2 win for Reading against Brighton. That will be the subject, our focus for the recap this week. And it started very interesting game. Justin Vermaat scored the opener. Deanne Rose with a nice second just after the break. Kind of let Brighton back in it, but then Tia Primmer with her first Reading goal, making use of a Deanne Rose shot that kind of bounced up off the bar and fell for Reading. And this, Peter, has just been the latest episode of what has been a really good kind of the second quarter of the season. Has just been so good for Reading, hasn't it? And, you know, because they started off not particularly good. I think it's 4 defeats to start the season. What has been behind the turnaround for the team this season?
It's been an incredible season, actually. Almost split into, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly, really. So I'd say, you know, starting with the bad, because I'd like to end on a positive, really, from that point of view. Yeah, the first 4 games, we conceded 10 goals over 4 games and scored 0. And to be fair, you know, the first game was away to Manchester United. The second game was home to Arsenal. So you probably wouldn't have expected to get much out of that. But I think it was the fact that there were no goals. And then there was a turnaround, really. There was the game against Aston Villa. We very much needed. It was a 3-0 win, and it was a 3-0 at half time. And the second half was relaxing for everyone. In between, there was a little bit of ugly, really. So the cup, I'm pleased to say the Brighton Cup was a super performance, really, because we haven't done very well in the Conti Cup, going out to 3 championship teams. And of course, we had that 1-0 win against Chelsea, which was euphoria, to say the least. And, you know, I can always talk about more about that one later. But the turnaround is incredible. It was a surprise, those first 4 games, because this is a really talented bunch of footballers, And they've got great character and they've got great spirit. So I guess to come back with a long-winded answer to your initial question, Kelly Chambers and that spirit of that team are the difference, really. They've stuck with it. I think it took them a while to gel, and they did look like, you know, they are talented players, and I think it's just taken them a while to gel, which is what Kelly Chambers said would happen. She said, stick with it, they'll gel together and they'll be good, and they certainly were.
Yeah, and this team seems to me, I remember when the Reading team first came into the WSL, as it's been formed and everything, as Farrah Williams was kind of one of the headline players, and a few more experienced of older heads were in the team. And now the emphasis has kind of shifted, hasn't it, to the next generation coming through. As I mentioned, Deanne Rose, very good in the Brighton game. Emma Harries as well is a player that there is a lot of kind of hope for, isn't there? And this team has, as a result, kind of got a bit more of momentum about it, a bit more energy about it, hasn't it?
Yeah, they have, actually. You're right to name. Emma Harries looks a super talent coming through. And again, you know, a bit of character in there as well. And And you're right, Kelly Chambers has, you know, there's been some good players and good experienced players in that squad, and some good players that have come through. You know, Fran Kirby was another example. Players that come through, and they're having to reinvent themselves each year, finding new talent from various far afield areas, really. So one of the new signings that's just come in, Trollsgaard, has come in from Denmark. So Sane Trollsgaard. It's interesting, actually. And quite a young squad, but some really good characters in there as well. You've still got, she's just been injured, actually, you know, in quite a nasty injury, but Grace Maloney in goal, you know, Tash Harding is, the stalwart of the team now as well. A young squad, actually, a really young squad.
Yeah, certainly. And there's a situation now where Reading are in the WSL table with those victories. It's kind of allowed them to get in amongst, you know, on the precipice of the title, challenging for that. It looks like Arsenal, Chelsea, perhaps Man United are going to dominate that this year, but only 2 points off a fourth at the moment. What is the kind of, you know, the limit almost for this team this season? Is it just to be competitive, to maybe have a bit of a cup run? They've got West Ham in the next round of the cup, actually, that was drawn tonight. That's on the 26th of February at the Select Car Leasing as well, actually. The next round of the cup. So is it kind of just be competitive, enjoy yourself, have a cup run, or do you think there is a kind of bigger goal that maybe Reading can attain this season?
Well, I think the team and Kelly Chambers will be, you know, be very professional and will be aiming high. As a Reading fan, and I'm sure as many other Reading fans, particularly after those first four games, you looked at the league really with trepidation, really, because there's some big clubs now in that league where, you know, you've got your Arsenals and your Chelsea's, which we knew, you know, and your Manchester City's, Manchester United and Tottenham coming into it. You know, there's some resources behind some of the other, you know, Premier League teams, the West Ham's and the Brighton. So it looked quite daunting to start with. So I would have said anything, you know, top six is a really good result, but they're on such terrific form at the moment that I don't know, maybe top four is not out of their grasp at all. So yeah, it's interesting times, really interesting for them.
Yeah, certainly not out of their reach. And it's a very interesting point you make as well about WSL and the fact that, I mean, it's the nature of football, isn't it? No matter what level, no matter what you know, who's playing, really, it's going to be the case of the finances involved are going to have such a big impact on who does well. You're right, Man United and Tottenham weren't really a force recently, but they are, you know, they are now. They're third and fourth in the league. Man City having a bit of a drop off and they're still fifth. And then even after that, teams like Leicester, Everton, you know, these clubs, just generally speaking, have so much more might than Reading if they choose to put it in, because basically Reading women's team are going to have to be as self-sufficient as possible, given that we know what's going on with the men's team, certainly financially. So, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting time. And kind of final point to discuss on the recap before we move on is Kelly Chambers as well. In terms of, I remember doing a piece for the fanzine we had for the 150th anniversary in December, and just how much one person, obviously she'll admit before anyone else, it's not just her, but for one person to have driven this football club for so many years, it is just an astounding feat as to how well it's gone.
Yeah, it's incredible, because she was a football player as well for Reading Football Club, so she's been there a long time. And like I said, that's a difficult task that she's got, to keep reinventing that football club every season on a very limited budget. So she, again, is very clearly a talented manager. And she's starting, I think, to get a name as well. She was on Sky Sports recently for the first time, I think. So I'm surprised that there aren't more people looking at her, actually. I don't think anybody associated with Reading will want her to leave. But she's clearly a very good manager and clearly a very good people person, because again, this is a really young squad, and she can manage younger players, older players, talented players. They've all come through her ranks. And I think I said in one of the reports as well that she's almost unflappable on the touchlines. And she is actually, she's very cool actually under pressure, and doesn't seem to show any of that side of it. So yeah, highly regarded.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly some, I know what you mean, actually, certainly someone who could be, you know, sort of names floated around. I know England and, you know, Arsenal and Chelsea sort of teams who maybe want a bit more of a glamour signing than someone from Reading. But yeah, Kelly Chambers very much. And I did actually see her on Sky Sports earlier today as well. So very much making waves and rightly getting the credit she deserves. Right then, we are going to move on with the show now, go into News Bites and find out what has been going on with the other teams around Reading FC this week.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
We'll start with the under-23s, the men's under-23s. 4-1 defeat to Aston Villa, unfortunately. They've got Stoke on February the 7th next. Weekend off for the under-18s. They've got Brighton on the 5th. And the men's team lost 4-0 to QPR. They're now 2 points clear the drop zone in the Championship. They've got Bristol City on the 9th. It's deadline day, as we know, on Monday, 31st of January, as we record this. It's about 8 p.m. as we record this. So who knows what will have happened between, you know, us hanging up and then the madness that might ensue. But, you know, let's talk about Veljko Paunović's team then and what they've been doing. It looks like George Puskas is off, going to Pisa, a Serie B team, on an initial loan deal that rumoured on the continent. There's kind of rumoured that this is going to be a permanent deal if Pisa, currently second in the Italian second tier, get promoted. And yeah, how much of wages and everything they're covering, we're not quite sure at the moment. But he appears to be off, as does Liam Moore appear to be off. I think it's his birthday today, funnily enough. The club kind of slipped that into a tweet earlier, in a swap deal for Tom Ince, which is apparently a loan swap deal, with Tom Ince having 5 months left on his Stoke contract. So what do we make of these then? Firstly, George Puskas, heading off then. What do you make of that, Peter?
I'd like to say it's a surprise. I don't think it is. The timing's not great, is it, on the very last day? But I think it's no surprise that his career hasn't flourished under Reading Football Club, which is a shame, again, because, you know, he's had a couple of moments where you thought, this is a really exciting striker to watch, and a couple of hat tricks, but it's never come to fruition really. So I think a clean break for him is good, and perhaps a clean break for Reading Football Club. But maybe a little bit disappointing in that just as he starts to show a bit of form over the last couple of games and having two strikers up front, he's now off. So I guess we can only wish him well.
Yeah, it's one. I mean, ultimately, if he's going on loan, he might end up back here. We've had it with Sonny Aluko before. I remember him going off and everyone saying, oh, well, that's, you know, that's that. And that was when he had 18 months left on his contract and he came back and played a season. And, you know, I don't think he was horrific in the season he played when he was back. So who knows what's going to happen with George Puskas. You know, we've spoken on this podcast so much about him. One thing I would say is that I find it a little bit ironic that some fans, who, you know, the fans who have berated him for so many months are now kind of a bit questioning the fact that he's being allowed to go, because ultimately he's still not scored enough goals for Reading. That's kind of the bottom line, isn't it? And if we have enough, you know, do we have enough firepower without him? Mate, hopefully, Zhao, hopefully, maybe there'll be an incoming in the next hour or so. Kind of doubt it, though. I think we can kind of assume that the things that we know of at the moment is kind of where it's going to finish. So, yeah, if the club have a plan and if the club know what they're doing and can keep players fit, most importantly, then fair enough. As for Liam Moore, I think this one isn't kind. As we talk now, it's not kind of done enough for us to go and, you know, dissect Liam Moore's Reading career. So we'll leave that one with the, you know, all of you in the future listening to this who know whether it's happened or not. If it does happen, I think both clubs might think they've got a good deal in it. I probably would say that we're letting go the player with more value, as it were, but then maybe we're getting the player who's actually better in return because of our contract. So, yes, that's News Bites. That's deadline day. Keep on top of the Tyler Sten Twitter and Facebook for what's been going on, and, of course, the blog. So let's go on then into the mailbag and talk about what everyone has been saying this week.
You're listening to the Tyler Sten podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Right then, all jokes aside and all kind of, you know, how wonderful it is to talk about the women's team on this podcast. Alas, you know, we do kind of have to address the elephant in the room, which is the, as I say, Veljko Paunović's team and what's been going on there this weekend, that 4-0 defeat at QPR. It just, quite frankly, it wasn't worth going digging into deeply for that. It wouldn't have done us any favours, really. So the mailbag does kind of talk about you guys. You've tweeted in off the Facebook on and the Gmail as well, what's going on and everything. And Andrew Smith opens us up saying, I'm watching Derby and Birmingham now and look at their protest and media attention they're getting. We're getting forgotten about and ignored. How do we get this changed? Who can get the protest going? No one reads my post, so who has sufficient power to get something going? I mean, fundamentally, whether media attention is really the thing that we need at this moment, I don't know. But one thing Eddie Corr replied to, and he said, it feels like sections of our fan base are vocal about getting the manager out, others about the owner, others about the players. Nothing is there to unite behind. No one thing to galvanise everyone and get everyone in opposition against something. I mean, my two pence on this is that ultimately getting the manager out is the important thing to do. Getting Dae Jong to run the club better is an incredibly important thing to do, but a Dae Jong statement about his long-term future or whatever isn't going to keep Reading up. Paunović kind of being replaced probably will. I don't know how you feel on this, Peter, in terms of the kind of upcoming protests. What sort of things do you think would be better? What sort of things are you keen to avoid, maybe? I know that tennis balls being thrown on the pitch has been seen over the years at some clubs, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a really tricky one, isn't it? I'm not a massive fan of protests, but I'm not a massive fan of negativity, really. But again, the club have got to know that the position they're in at the moment needs to change, and there does need to be change, doesn't it? It's got to be controlled. It's got to be controlled protests as well, hasn't it? I'm not a massive one for the game being stopped whilst it's being played. I don't really like individual player booing. I don't mind sort of the collective negativity, but it's a tricky situation they find themselves in. I think Andrew Smith, to be fair, will be pleased because he said, no one reads my posts and you've just read his post. So he should be happy with that, Mark.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do. Give fans a voice. That's the important thing, isn't it? Peter Griffith is saying, how will fans react to Paunović and the board if Reading go to the end of the season with mid-table form? What is the tantrum, sorry, protest actually supposed to achieve? Have any of the listeners worked in a company that can't afford to offer contracts, and did they give 100%? Little Gem adding, is Paunović doing a job because we can't afford to sack him? Which is, you know, it's probably not the sort of thing that gets very well received on Twitter when people have these sort of contrarian points of view, but still important to cover them. I mean, ultimately, I think it's a pretty simple answer. If Paunović and Reading get to the end of the season on mid-table form and we stay up, then Paunović just kind of shuffles off at the end of the season and that's it. We're happy we're up. We're staying up rather, but you know, we're kind of playing with fire if we think that maybe that's going to be as easy as it sounds. The question as to whether we can afford him or not, I think, I don't know. Do you think that that's something that's a problem, Peter? Do you think that we're keeping him because we can't afford to sack him? He's only got 4 months left on his contract now. I can't imagine it would, unless he's managed to negotiate £1 million sacking clause. I can't imagine that's the problem.
It's kind of, it's crossed my mind about that. Perhaps not on the, like you said, actually, perhaps not on the fact that he hasn't got long to go, but I did wonder whether the fact that it probably won't just be him going and some of his backroom team will go with him, and that maybe they're all going to be replaced and you need to replace, you know, 3, 4, 5 people. Maybe there is a financial implication behind that, but it's really difficult to know when there is no message coming back out of the football club, really. So it is difficult to know. That has crossed my mind around the financial side of that aspect as well.
Yeah, I suppose it's ultimately, I mean, this is, it's another question, actually. Roy Robinson, what's the impact that coaches compared to managers have on players, their performance and morale? I remember a big dip after Stephen Reid left, which, and I agree. I think Stephen Reid was a very good coach that I did notice the dip as well. Roy Robinson, and the same has happened, especially since O'Shea has left defensively. Not excusing Paunović, he needs to go, but wondering what the impact is here. And it's a very fair point. It's very difficult. I think Marko Mitrović is kind of the defence man in the Pavlovich's setup at the moment, but he was last year when we had a okay defence. So it's just an interesting one. I think how much the coaches have an impact, obviously, you know, it's very difficult. Think of someone like Sam. I got told off by Ollie the other day when I spoke about Sir Alex Ferguson on his podcast, but you think about him at Man United, he had several different assistants and obviously they're all very high quality, but, you know, the team did generally keep up under the common denominator of the manager during that. So perhaps I think it probably starts and ends with the manager, doesn't it really? Neil saying, do we really expect players to fight and put themselves on the line for Reading when they're all out of contract in the summer? I don't think this is a huge issue, Peter. It's not great, obviously. And, you know, we can talk for days about why the club have let players get out of contracts and all this sort of stuff. But fundamentally, I think players are still going to give a really good go at it because they don't want that on their CV. They don't, you know, these players, yeah, they're wealthy, but they're not millionaire kind of wealthiness. They have to go and get a contract in the summer. If you're someone like, you know, Josh Lauren, you're thinking, if I play really well for Reading and I help keep them up, I might get a £20,000 a week contract with a high-flying championship club, maybe a lower Premier League team or something. However, if Josh Lauren is part of a Reading team that goes down and he plays badly in that, he's looking at half that, less than half that. It's a massive amount of difference you can make in your career in the next 6 months. So I do think that players who are out of contracts, maybe loan players, you could argue, but players who are out of contracts, I think that they're going to have to be given everything, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think it's confidence at the moment that's the problem, which again is probably why a change is needed, because, you know, even against QPR, we could have, you know, we may be unlucky not to get a penalty shout on Lauren early in the first half. But as soon as we went a goal down, the confidence was shattered, really. And it's that bit that's lacking, really. I don't think it's lack of effort sometimes. I think they've just... you're right. I don't think they want relegation on their CV. They're looking upwards. If they're looking to leave Reading Football Club, they want new, exciting prospects and the chance of playing in the Premier League to go to, don't they? So, yeah. And the other part around the management and the back, you know, the backroom team as well. I think sometimes it's quite easy to make theories fit to what's happening at the moment. So, you know, the lack of... John O'Shea not being there and looking weak defensively. But as you said, last season when everything was working and going well, we didn't give that a thought, really. So I agree, actually. I think the players are trying, but it's just that lost bit now where we've got to galvanize and get together and push on. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's very difficult, isn't it, to just kind of get confidence isn't really a switch that you can flick. It can turn out being a switch that you can flick on, you know, maybe with a goal or a last-minute incident or something, but you can't just decide to be confident. I'm sure that's not how it's working.
No, not at all. And that's where the change comes, doesn't it? And that's where, yeah, you know, you see the bounce back, don't you, with the honeymoon period, with new blood coming in, really, whether that's new players or new management, really. So that's the switch that needs to be changed. Something has to change, doesn't it, because we're doing the same thing each week at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the old saying, isn't it, that it's in doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is the definition of insanity, and that kind of feels what we're in at the moment. David does say, do we think Paolo's possibly getting kept in charge until the end of the transfer window? As it's being noted that he does most of the graft, could he be given one game in February then gone? RFC News saying, how do we get the owners out if he doesn't care? What could actually happen? I mean, the Pounder point, I think it's an interesting one, yeah, about him. Maybe you could make him director of football, I don't know, to get the transfers done. Although, from as we sit here now, that question was sent a couple, I think is yesterday it was, and as we sit here now at the end of deadline day, obviously not a huge amount has gone on in terms of incomings for Reading at the moment. And Andy McIntosh emailed us in, Andy from Thatcham saying, how do you think the decline, or how much of the decline is down to dropping attendances? These appear to have been falling ever since the playoff season. Is this all because of people not coming back after COVID? Is the club's poor financial state related to matchday income, while low attendance is just a reaction to poor results? How does this bode for our potential financial position in League One? Well, Funny enough, Krasen Anen actually tweeted us saying, will we be able to survive as a club in League One, which we'll address in a second. But I think in terms of the attendances, I think it's just, it links in, doesn't it, with everything. It links in with the fact that fans want to protest at the moment. Obviously, you know, if we are a club like Derby that can get big attendances, even when we're not doing very well, then that obviously does help sort of create this siege mentality that people were talking about earlier. And kind of what I fear, as I said, I'm not a kind of Dae Jong, get out of my club sort of person, but I do massively fear that with Paunovic being in charge and with the way the club's going now, and we've just spoken about how every week we're going through the motions of these kind of pathetic defeats, and that you start off getting angry about that, and there's the anger about it, and then most people can't sustain that anger. You'd be on Twitter, there's hundreds of people who can sustain the anger for as long as possible, but most people can't do that. Most people don't hold anger in them forever, even when it's their football team that they've, you know, loved for years, and that anger turns to apathy. And that's what I think links in with the attendances. People just switch off. But a lot of the people who aren't going to games at the moment aren't plastic fans. They're just fans who don't see the point or don't want to go every week or whatever. And I can't blame people for thinking that, because as you say, unless you're going to be angry every week, you kind of feel this is just a kind of pit of despair almost around the club. And that's the danger that Reading are right in the middle of at the moment. It's not a danger for the future, it's the danger for now. And this is kind of where it boils down to for me when it comes to the future, or the short-term future at least. If you leave Paunovic in charge and you don't make any sort of clear, obviously the transfer market, we weren't able to make a clear statement of intent, but if this is just how it is for the rest of the season, then fans will, you know, some will get angry, a lot will be apathetic, and a lot just won't turn up. And for me, when it boils down to what to do, when, you know, how do we get the owners out or whatever, it's more just a case of that somehow telling Dae Jong that, in my opinion, keeping Paunovic in charge is effectively neglecting the club at the moment. You are letting the club just kind of not die as such, or maybe die, but just letting it subside, letting it ebb away, and just not doing anything about it, which is the sad thing. I don't know. I mean, on the topic of League One, are you, Peter, a fan that can see a positive future for Reading dropping down into League One? I'm sure if we bounce back up, it'll be happy days, but it just doesn't feel to me like that's the easy situation that it sounds.
No, I don't. I must admit, apart from a few new grounds that I've never been to, I don't look forward to League One at all. And like you said, I think if you do get a bounce back, then that could be good. But I think there's a bigger fear, which is that, and there are big clubs down there now, aren't they? The Sunderlands and the Boltons and the Portsmouths that have, you know, been struggling for a long time now. So, no, I think there's been a general apathy around the club now and demise for quite a few years, really. It feels as though there's been a lost connection to the community since Sir John Medeski handed over the reins, and it hasn't really worked. And perhaps, you know, Paulo, for his own, you know, for the position that he finds himself now in, the start last season has almost killed us in that over-promise, under-deliver type of way. It is the hope that sometimes kills you, isn't it, really? But action has to be taken, and Dae Jong and, you know, the team, the management team that sit behind it now, the owners need to make some big calls, because, yeah, the apathy is just taking over now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? When it comes to kind of, you know, showing to the fans that there is something, I just think that, you know, Dae Jong isn't ultimately he's not going to leave the club, is he? And if he does leave the club, the financial mess that we're in might be significantly bigger, let alone the fact that he probably owns the training ground, certainly built the training ground, owns the stadium. Him leaving, I don't think would necessarily bring back a significant, you know, portion of connection with the local community. Because I suppose one of the things, as you mentioned there, since Medeski left, we've had three owners in it's probably about a decade now since Medeski left, or maybe even just more than a decade now, but we've had three owners in that time. And even within that, we've had several sets of kind of emperors, haven't we? We've had the Tevreden era with Yap Stan, we've had Ron Gourlay, We've had all these people who have come in saying, I am now in charge of this club. I'm going to implement a long-term vision. We're going to move forward. And then they're gone in 2 years or 18 months. And that's not just about the managers. That's about the people behind the scenes and everything. There was some Star had their chat with the club in the week, and there were some interesting quotes about the people who are now head of recruitment and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I don't expect to have famous faces or whatever, but I'd like at least like to know or have a vague sense of who's making these decisions and, you know, why they're making these decisions. And think about Dae Yong Pang, who's the CEO at the moment, who is effectively just a mate of the owner who, you know, is a direct line to him. And it's these sort of things, I think, when it comes to connections. And it links in with Eddie Cord's final question for the mailbag. He said, magic one time, what one thing would you change over the next 2 weeks to give us the best chance of survival? Manager, director of football, contract renewals, new owner. I mean, we can probably include signings in that as we still got some deadline day left. What would you say is the one thing that could be changed over the next 2 weeks to give us the best chance?
Gosh, it's the new manager, I think, is the magic wand now. I think a director of football is probably a little bit late. It's change we want now. And I don't like calling for any manager's head, but something has to change, doesn't it? And I think it feels like we're in a bit of last chance saloon. And everybody's saying about the Peterborough game being the big game, and it certainly is. And putting that back 24 hours doesn't do anything to appease fans either, does it really? When people are going, have bought their tickets and arranged their transport or their days off work. But so that doesn't really help either. But we talk about the Peterborough game being the big game, but actually, you know, if Derby get their act together and win two and a half more games than us, two wins and a draw or something like that, all of a sudden we could be going down with Peterborough. So, big change required at the moment.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that ultimately, when as you say about not liking sack managers, and I know that people have been calling for Pavlovich's head on social media and whatnot for a long time, and you can always be the first one. I demand that the next Reading manager be sacked now, just to be the first one to get in there and show that you're ahead of the game and you're always right. Because ultimately, every manager's going to leave, aren't they? So I think that had Pavlovich been sacked, a month ago after the Kidderminster result, I think we probably would have all said, fair enough. It's been good, Pauno, but it's just not gone right. And we'll move on and we'll have the good memories. But because it's just kept going on, we lost to Fulham 7-0. We last minute defeat to Middlesbrough, haven't been ahead. Luton was dross. QPR was dross. Huddersfield were just weird. Because all these things keep happening, and he could resign, I guess, but he's not exactly a government minister. Not that they resign for anything anyway these days, but this is not, it's not really on him to resign. It's more these days for someone to take back control and say that we can do better and we're going to move on. So, yeah, I think that it's just getting a little bit silly now. And unfortunately, it does appear that this is what we're buckled in for now, at least for the next couple of weeks or something else mad happens. Because if Pavlovic isn't gone now, you do have to wonder when he will go. That's the mailbag then. A little bit later than usual this week. We're going to go into big match preview, return our focus to the women's team because the men's team have next weekend off. We'll talk about the big match preview as Reading FC go to Everton.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Sunday, 6th of February, it is Everton against Reading at Walton Hall Park. Everton 10th in the WSL at the moment. Not a particularly good run for them. Three wins in the last 11. They did comfortably get past Huddersfield in the FA Cup on the weekend, though, so they're not doing too badly, but certainly, going away from home, if Reading being upwardly mobile as they are in the league, they've won 6, drawn 1 of their last 7. This is a game we've got to be looking to win.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll go into this game with real confidence and rightly so. So Everton have only won 3 games this season. Reading are on super form and super confidence, and they are also grinding out results when they're not playing so well. So, you know, they had a great result against Leicester when they didn't play particularly well. We know their defensive capabilities is very good as well with their super win against Chelsea. So, yeah, they'll go into that game with real confidence. And, you know, they've got a chance to go fourth in the table on merit. So, it's really exciting, actually. Something really good to look forward to. And I'm really pleased it's come together after those initial, you know, four games as well.
Yeah, and final one to talk about as well is that FA Cup fifth round tie against West Ham has now been confirmed. And for Reading, I think what would a cup run do you think would mean for Reading? Because obviously if, you know, getting into, I think we got to semi-final against West Ham a few years ago, didn't we? And had a penalty shootout and obviously it didn't go well up and Reading crashed out. But for Reading to push on and maybe get an FA Cup final spot or something like that, it would just mean, it would almost be the summation of so many years of work. And at the same point, not necessarily even be an end goal. It could just be the latest step, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's a great fixture, actually, home to West Ham at the end of February. And they were so close. And they feel like a bogey team, West Ham. And they feel like a bogey team to me. And I think it's because I can't get that semi-final performance over at Adams Park. That semi-final performance against West Ham, where you rightly said we went out on penalties, because we absolutely battered them that day. And it should have been, you know, they did not deserve to win that game at all. And ironically, we missed a penalty in normal time as well. And I had a couple of penalty shouts turned down. So it will make for a really good game, because some of the Reading players won't have forgotten that. It should be, it's a really super good cup game to look forward to. And if they could get into, you know, to Wembley, what a fillip and lift that would be for Reading women's team and the area and the women's game in general as well.
Yeah, and I think that even though it's obviously the men's team that's 150th anniversary, I think even that, you know, just the formation of there being a Reading Football Club, that would be a fitting 150th anniversary if the women can, you know, play a big role in that and mark it in a way that the men certainly seem to be failing to do at the moment. And we'll be back for the next podcast, because Bristol City away is the 9th of February, the Wednesday, because we're not in the FA Cup. Reading, actually, the men's team are going to be playing Arsenal, supposedly, in a behind-closed-doors friendly on the weekend, as a bit of, you know, bit of squad prep and everything like that. So when we're back next is a bit up in the air, potentially the Thursday morning after the Bristol City game. Potentially there'll be some news before then. They'll drag us back in, who knows. But as I say, we'll be back at some point in the next fortnight or so to review the latest Reading men's action. As for this week, well, it's been absolutely fantastic talking about the women's team. Such a good news story and such greatness to have yourself on, Peter, this week. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. And and I would recommend that anyone comes down and watches the women. They're really talented football players. It's a really good family atmosphere. So, and great football to watch as well.
Absolutely. That is what we always, at the end of the day, that's what we love Reading teams to have, is just great football and great atmosphere. And hopefully that's the sort of thing that we can have club-wide before too long. So, as always, thank you very much for listening this week. Thank you very much for tuning in as we kind of took a little bit of a detour. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. And you can always catch Peter's reports on the Reading's games on thetilesend.com. The podcast will be back in about a week or so, maybe a bit longer than that. We'll see how things turn out. Maybe I want to be back sooner to talk about some big news. Who knows? But until then, thank you very much for listening. Come on, you arse. Leave a trail.
cry out. Funny how the crowd's always